deeply spiritual and hungry for connection, longing for ways to be of use, even amidst chaos all around him, Isaiah responds eagerly to the call put before him. "Here am I," he says, "send me." This despite just having had a seraphim of angels of the Lord place burning hot coals on his lips to prepare him for the work in front of him. He did not cry. He did not complain. He did not back down from what was being asked. I was talking to Kelly a couple days ago, who, besides having a lovely voice, is also chair of the leadership development team, and I think we would agree that that's what we like to see in volunteers. Especially volunteers who take on the particularly difficult and important work of religion. "Here am I, send me." These words are often quoted all over the land in Christian pulpits to mobilize and inspire followers. But interestingly, what isn't often quoted is the next seven verses of that passage, which follow Isaiah's courageous proclamation with God's confession that the task before him will be difficult and discouraging. "Go out and talk to the people," God explains. "Build bridges, connect the disconnected, instill trust in the timid, help the hesitant and the hurting and the disenfranchised come together." Oh, and by the way, he seems to say in almost an afterthought, "understand that when you take this message to the people, they will not listen to you." Sometimes God, the God who places such difficult tasks before us, is hard to understand. Let me tell you about a time when I had a difficult time understanding God and the work that religion was asking me to do. When I went forth to serve my first church, a California boy called to Atlanta, Georgia, I was eager and hungry for the work. I did not understand the difficulty. "Here am I," I cried, "send me." But when I got there, the difficulty within the passage was quickly revealed. I first saw it among my neighbors. For when I moved into my neighborhood, a couple of families came over together and brought me supper to welcome me. Very hospitable thing to do, I thought. And it was even macaroni and cheese, my favorite. And as you know, church is very big in the South, so hearing that not only did I go to church, but that I served a church, they got very excited. "Oh, and what church?" they asked. And when I told them, and I'll never forget this, one woman smiled demurely and said, "Well, of course you do, bless your heart." But I never got any more macaroni and cheese. How many people have been part of those conversations before? How many people have felt the pain of polarization and yearned for something that felt a little bit more real and connecting and unifying? All around us, we see categories and distinctions and hierarchies of ideologies based on politics and race and class and gender and sexuality or language, all of which encourage more division and separation and isolation. A great number of people have been at their wits' end and have felt pushed to the margins of society and the edge of hope, wanting to believe that there must be something, something that rises above the sting of judgment and rejection that can lead toward understanding and acceptance, but they just haven't found it. There's a story about such a person, a young man, who is standing on a bridge that spanned across a rocky cavern, and at the edge of that bridge, he stood between the cables looking over the side, and he thought about all the division in the world, and he thought about jumping. And at that moment, an elderly man happened to be walking upon the bridge and saw him and could see the expression on his face and knew what he was thinking and cried out, "Don't do it." "Why shouldn't I?" the younger man wailed. "Well, can't you see there's so much to live for?" the elder said in response. "Well, like what?" said the younger. "Well, are you religious or atheist?" "Religious," he sighed. "Me too," said the older man. "Are you Western religious or Eastern religious?"
"Western,"
replied the young man. "Well, me too," said the elder. "Are you Christian or Jewish?"
"Christian."
"Well, me too," said the elder. "Are you Catholic or Protestant?"
"Protestant."
"Me too," said the elder. "Are you Episcopalian or Baptist?"
"Baptist."
"Wow, me too. Are you Baptist Church of God or Baptist Church of the Lord?"
"Baptist Church of God."
"Me too. Are you the original Baptist Church of God or the Reformed Baptist Church of God?"
"Well, the Reformed Baptist Church of God." The younger man began to smile.
"Well, me too. Are you Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation of 1879 or Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation 1915? And now, almost giddy, the younger man exclaimed, "I'm Reformed Baptist Church of God Reformation of 1915. The older man scowled, "Die, heretic scum," and pushed him over the bridge. We laugh because it's funny. But it's also not funny because it's true. The world, and even religion, is terribly divided. Does anyone know how many different denominations there are in the world today? Take a guess. 800, a couple thousand. There are 39,000 different denominations in the world today. 34,000 of those are Christian Protestant. That's not churches. That is denominations. And each one is separated from the others by some unbridgeable disagreement over God or ritual or sacrament or prayer or how to use which church doctrine. Religion is a Latin word, really the joining of two words, re, which means again, legare, which is the root of our word ligament, used to bind together, to take what is broken and make it whole again. How ironic that it is the name of an institution which is often more dividing than unifying. And it continues. Today, 270 new denominations emerge out of disagreement every year. That's 5 new denominations a week. And that division is not something that we Unitarian Universalists are immune to. Many congregations in our own denomination have deeply divided feelings about talking of theology. And many more simply choose not to talk about it for fear of upsetting people. In fact, there are a few people who, upon finding out that my first sermon of my interim career here was going to be about God, just sort of sighed as if to say, "Well, I don't think you'll survive it, but it was nice to meet you anyway." Last year, I taught a course on theology in my church in Monterey, and 12 of us got together. And we pledged ourselves to try and name what we believed about God and religion. And initially, many of us expressed excitement about doing this with other
like-minded people. But when it came time to actually naming our personal understanding of God, we fell into our own red hat, blue hat discussion. And we did end up agreeing on one thing, that when it came to God, there was nothing like-minded about us. But then we tried one exercise that changed everything. We took turns offering statements about God where the only requirement was to say the word "and" before we named our truth. I was so impressed with what we came up with that I sent it around to colleagues, and they were so impressed that they asked if they could add to it. So I'd like to read to you the list that we came up with. God is love. And God is an internal spark. And God is the cosmic heartbeat. And God is the space between the notes in music. And God is the cosmic force not involved in human affairs. And God is possibility after possibility unfolding. And God is daffodils in the spring, thousands of them. And God is reality. And God is imagination. And God is truth when it comes. And God is justice when it happens. And God is the holding of breath just before justice happens. And God does not fit into any box. And God is within me. And God never can be defined because whatever word we came up with would be too limiting. And God is everything we cannot possibly imagine. And God is a woman. And God has no gender. And God is a black lesbian divorced woman in her mid-50s who lives with her cats. And God is no one to mess with. And God is a holy mystery. And God is here. And God is not here. And God is things as they are waiting to be discovered. And God is the most frustrating and unnameable of realities I have ever experienced. And God is in both the laughter and the tears. And God is the blending of all things. And God is a word created by human beings to project their own image. And God is evolving. And God is one. It's a powerful list. But to tell you the truth, the most powerful part about that list are all the ands in between the statements. The simple way that all our truths can become joined and additive. The simple way that when joined together, they become a prayer. Too often, we get so emphatic about what God isn't that we tie ourselves up in knots. God is not this. God is not that. Our theological conversations, even in these loving and tolerant UU communities, become a litany of rebuttals. And you can often identify a rebuttal of someone's personal understanding because the first word of their response is, "but." During the class, we talked about how painful and divisive it feels to open your imagination and heart and hear the response of, "but," and how hungry people are for that sense of unity. How they come to churches seeking connection and belonging, and yet too often we show them our butts. And they begin to believe that churches are simply places to go to butt heads. And so much of the time they begin to see the minister as the chief butt head. It If we look around churches today, including Unitarian Universalist churches, it's not hard to see their point. We often get caught up in abstract distinctions, in needing to be right, and we lose sight of needing to be whole and healed and connected. And it's not just in our conversations about what to do about God. It can be about what to do about love and justice. It can be about whether to go to two services or stay at one service. It could be about what time to have those services. And it could even be about Polylog. And thank you for bringing that up. Because I wanted to make sure that we got a chance to say that we're not having Polylog this morning, which may seem rather ironic since my whole sermon is actually about inviting and welcoming and celebrating multiple points of view. So I want you to know that I am not against Polylog. I am for it. But I believe that trying to achieve real depth and layers of diversity of perspectives is simply impossible in 5 minutes of time. And you will never hear from most of your introverts here, which means that you're leaving out a very big part of the conversation. So today, we are going to have Polylog after the service, and it's going to be downstairs in Fellowship Hall where we've set up some chairs. And so I hope you will stay for that conversation. You may even get some coffee and bring it over and join and make the conversation wide. And I hope you do. Because religion needs examples of communities that understand how to extend their ands and connect with one another instead of showing one another their butts and creating division. I believe the church at large, and this included, is called to teach people how to practice non-duality with grace and humility and a sense of humor. Indeed, one of the best outcomes of the class that I taught last year were the t-shirts that we talked about making together that had the picture of the church on the front and the words on the back that asked the question, "Does this church make my butt look too big?" Friends, like Isaiah, we are being called into conversations that are difficult, but too important to avoid. It is time to put away the alligators and the warthogs and tear down the walls. It's time that we all learned how to create safe community, to seek and serve love and justice. It is time to extend our ands and walk together. And on our way, we will pray. God of our understanding, help us with this calling for holy conversations. Help us find the connections that elude us and let go of the fear that divides us and build the love that will save us. And all the while, help us to look upon one another and all of our differences and say, amen.